The Film Crickets are intended for mature audiences. Any guests on The Film Crickets do not necessarily share the same opinions as The Film Crickets.
Film Crickets, chirping about movies.
It's time for The Film Crickets with Jay Fortier, Chris Martineau, and Melanie Howerton. On this week's episode, host from The Roll Podcast, Maurice Hunt, rejoins The Crickets, and Jay, Chris, Melanie, and Maurice review the 1946 American Christmas supernatural drama film, It's a Wonderful Life. Does it stand the test of time? Let's find out. Your film crickets are on now.
And I believe that scream, when he goes, yes, it's like, good, I just found my car that I got into a drunk driving accident with into a tree.
I'm so glad everything's it's still great. There.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. Oh, well, welcome to the Film Crickets, everybody. My name is Jay Fortier. I'm along with my good friend and co-host, Chris Martineau.
Hello.
Hello. And I am along with my good friend and co-host, Melanie Howerton. How are you doing, Melanie?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing well. Welcome back, Maurice. We haven't seen you in a while, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Unlike our main character, I was able to leave town, man, and I'm now in Florida, so.
I got out.
So I'm excited.
He got out.
I got out. It's good to be back.
Yeah, man.
Excellent.
Yeah, we did White Men Can't Jump, and then mm-hmm. we almost did Tin Cup together. And which he still hasn't seen, and it's about which you got to see it because it's really fun.
It is good.
Yes, I'm gonna watch you guys so I can watch our review on it since I wasn't
right. Well, it was, to make you laugh here, because our my friend Steve does the intro, he said, you know, hey, Maurice Hunt will be there, like, you know, like, you know, it was part of the thing, and I wasn't gonna have him redo it, so we were just gonna explain that you weren't there, and then so we started off after, like, you know, he said, hey, Maurice Hunt, and I was like, we both went, Maurice? Maurice?
Oh, sorry, y'all like, built a bit on it. That's good.
No,
that's
just really good. Doing what we could do.
Yeah, just built on it, yeah.
So we are we're breaking format by about 34 years or so with today's episode, It's a Wonderful Life. I forget, I'm sorry, I have a Swiss cheese brain. Why did we decide on something from three and a half decades previous to our niche? Not that I care, I'll do whatever, but who's I want to thank whoever's idea this was. So it's whose idea was this? You, Maurice? Was this Jay? Like, what happened? Why are we breaking format by 3.5 decades?
I'll let him explain it if he wants.
Yeah, I had some other Christmas movies in mind, and some other things were already taken. And so a buddy of mine that we podcast together, he was talking about how this is his favorite movie.
Okay.
And he had told me to watch it last year, and I didn't watch it. So then all of this started to happen again. I was like, oh, I'm linking up with the guys again. And I was like, okay, this might be a good opportunity. Now I have to watch it. And so that's kind of the origin of how we got to this point.
All right, that's cool. I'm into it. So usually we go around and say, what's your history with this movie? And say, I mean, I saw it in theaters when it came out. So I don't know if you guys know, but I got my TARDIS.
You look good, man.
Yeah, I got my TARDIS and I set it to 1946 and I went back. So you know, you go around. So Maurice, you never sat down and watched the movie ever. You knew it was there. You knew there were scenes from it, right?
I may have seen it in passing at some point, like pieces and parts, but I may have confused it with Twilight Zone.
Oh, fair enough. That is fair. It does have the same kind of energy at the end. There's no doubt about that. Twilight Zone isn't always just grim.
And the beginning too.
The beginning as well. All right. Okay. So obviously no one saw it in the theater. I can tell you my story with this, and let's go with Melanie. Like, Melanie, when's the first time you actually sat down and watched this beginning to end? Do you watch this every year? Do you, like, what's your deal?
No, I don't watch it every year. I should. I think I own it. I'm pretty. No, I know I own it because when the kids would be like, "Oh, you know what? I don't feel good today. I can't go to school." I was like, "Okay, well, you know, that's fine. But you're not going to be in your room. You're going to be on the couch, and we're going to watch movies that I know I could never make you watch. I may have them watch like classic movies, like
Clockwork Orange, and like Full Metal Jacket, Clockwork Orange, that sort of thing. All right.
No, it's more like It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street and like the Shirley Temple Little Princess, like stuff that was like black and white or something that I knew I would never get them to watch any other time, and they had to be forced to do it.
Okay.
You want to stay home? That's fine, but you're going to stay on the couch. You're going to watch these movies.
Okay.
So I haven't even really seen it a whole lot of times. I've just seen bits and pieces because when it's on TV, you know, you don't ever get to watch the whole thing. It's just whatever's there growing up. You know what I mean? I have to say, I think I enjoyed watching it this time above any other time because I just really sat down and paid attention to every little thing of it. So, okay. You know, it was a different experience, I think.
It's something. Jay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's your deal?
it's one of those movies I saw, like, I didn't actually watch it. It was always this thing that was on either in the background. It was always already in the middle of it. I never want to jump in. Especially if something is, you know, revered, I don't want to like jump in the middle. Like I want to see it from the beginning. And, you know, when I was a kid, I couldn't have probably appreciated this at all. Like, you know, because, you know, so I'm actually really psyched that I didn't watch it until I was like, I want to say late 20s, early 30s.
Okay. Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat. Like I knew it existed. I knew a couple of lines from it. Every time a bell rings, an angel gets wings. And Mary, I think my first super exposure to it was the SNL skit where they actually have the lost footage from It's a Wonderful Life. And somebody finds out that someone comes back and says, they basically restage the end. It's Dana Carvey as Jimmy Stewart and Dennis Miller comes in as his brother. And then somebody says, hey, we just found out Mr. Potter had the money the whole time. And Dana Carvey in his best, I'm sorry, blanking, his best.
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart, I'm sorry. Goes, well, let's get over there and kick his ass. And they go over to Potter's and they beat the shit out of him. Which I thought was just one. That was a William Shatner episode of SNL. You should watch it. But I'm in the same boat. Like, I knew it existed. I certainly wouldn't have given it the time of day because it's black and white. And black and white is, quote, boring. But then you get older and you watch it and... The first, I can't remember the first, probably early 30s, maybe somewhere around there. And you watch it. And at that point, you've had enough life experience to be at least be able to identify with Jimmy Stewart. Not the same, you know, post-depression, post-World War II depression era America is not the same. We don't have the same lessons now as from then. But certainly his life experiences, maybe you can, little bits of you can identify with George Bailey, maybe not everything, but some of it, and some of the things that maybe he's going through and the things that have gone through your head. And so I certainly appreciate it. And I love this movie so much, and I challenge myself to not cry at the end, and I always friggin' do. And I don't watch it every year, though I want to. I actually on purpose skip it so that it actually is meaningful the next year.
Yeah.
So this is my off year. For It's a Wonderful Life. I actually did not rewatch it because
you didn't.
I didn't because I know it. I've seen it. I've seen it a lot. I don't need to rewatch it. It's like other movies we've seen because it's my off year. I watched it last year, so I can't watch it this year. I'm going to watch it next year because I want it to mean something. I don't want that feeling to go away. And so I'm so scared of it going away because I'll know it's coming up. So I give it a break. So that's and I do the same thing. I'm sorry, I go off years with White Christmas, and I just saw White Christmas today, this year's rotation on the big screen. I went to go see it at the Alamo, and it's something. It's hokey, it's dated, it's all that stuff. But boy, it is an experience to see in vivid Technicolor. But this movie is not in vivid Technicolor; it's in black and white. So anyway, let's get into It's
a
Wonderful.
Wait, I have a question.
What?
Maurice, did you see it in color or black and white?
They have this in color?
No, they colorized it.
Yes, but it's
colorized it.
Yeah, so like you. So I'm psyched to hear that you saw the original because that's the way it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like in like
it's
a lot of people
remastered
like,
though the version I've seen. I don't know.
Oh, it's clean.
It really good. Like it was really clean. I don't know if that's the original.
No, they probably have cleaned it up. I just like you know a lot of people like really get it. It's like. I don't know if it was Ted Turner that did it, but
it was Ted Turner.
Yeah.
He bought the rights.
Like, basically.
They painted every frame of the movie with, and they made it look like it was in color because they assumed, well, no one wants to see a black and white movie. So they colorized it. It was like the first thing they ever colorized, and it's miserable.
Oh.
It's bad.
It's just weird. Like, it's, you know, bad. What I mean, like, it, yeah, it's better off this way.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah. Well, okay. So, so let's get into it. Never heard this movie referred to as Supernatural before. Thank you, Steve LaVoy. All right, so here we go. So, It's a Wonderful Life. Came out, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes long, 1946, rated PG. That was the only other rating there was besides G back in the day. An angel is sent from heaven to help a desperately frustrated businessman by showing him what life would have been like if he had never existed. Directed by Frank Capra, written by Francis Goodrich, Albert Hackett, and Frank Capra. Starring Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, Lionel Barrymore, who's fantastic, Thomas Mitchell, Henry Travers, and a bunch of people that were born in the 19th century. So that's it. That's It's a Wonderful Life. So before we get into the serious context of the movie, let's get the big debate, and I'll go with with Maurice first. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I tell you what, I felt that way about this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I felt that when you said right there, I was like, okay, all right. we can't just, oh, last minute, we're going to classify this as, so no.
So you see where I'm going with this. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. It just takes place in the framework of Christmas. Jay, I don't want to hear it. I don't care what they said. No, I know. I'm just kidding.
And I both agreed on the episode.
No. But then we have the podcast where they said, like, the writer said it's a Christmas movie or some shit. I forget what it was.
We
agree. No, I know. I'm not saying.
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing to me?
Nah, screw you, friend. So Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. It's just the framework of the movie. And It's a Wonderful Life is not a Christmas movie. It's just that, do we agree that the payoff makes it 100 times better because it's at Christmas?
Yeah. I mean, I you know what? Because of the debate, I just wanted to say, I checked what time was left in the film when they arrived on the Christmas time, mm-hmm. and there was still 53 minutes left in the movie.
Sure. Yep.
You know, so it wasn't as like they didn't bookend it so much that it was like the last 10 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, like at least it, like some of it was, you know, but I understand. I'm not going to debate anybody that says it isn't, you know.
I would maintain that the movie, and we'll get into some of the things about it. I maintain that the movie has to be done at Christmas, because if you are George Bailey, or you feel like George Bailey, or you are even mentally ill, George Bailey's not mentally ill. He's just, he has a hard time wrapping his head around all the bad things and that has happened, that he feels as though has happened to him, right? That's what he thinks. And the fact that you are in the middle of all this joyfulness, but you have this thing inside of you that you cannot, you want to be joyful, but you feel better feeling bad about yourself, makes it worse. It's not any other day. It's not like, you know, we went to a football game and everybody was cheering and I was miserable. It's Christmas. Like, it's supposed to be love and joy come to you and to you, your wassail too. It's joy to the world. It's joy, jammed down your throat, and you don't want to feel joy. You want to hang on to feeling bad. And that makes it worse and better. I feel as though, like, you have to have this, the payoff is at the end. It's not a Christmas movie, but I can see why they do it at Christmas. Right? Or am I nuts?
Yeah. I mean, it's
yeah, like, I'm nuts.
I guess, though, I think with the kind of with the angel concept, I think it does lean to work better in having that as a backdrop. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this was just a regular in the summertime, he's going through all of these things and an angel comes and he has to have kind of the, you know, the ghost of Christmas past concept without the actual holiday. Sure. I don't know if it works as well. So I would agree. I think that you do need it.
Mm-hmm. I think when it's tough when you're in such the strait that George is in, it's tough. It makes it worse when everybody around you is trying to be happy. Right. And let's think about George's mentality. He feels this town, he has made it so that the town, everyone in the town can be happy but him. Mm-hmm. He has sacrificed his life for the savings for the building and loan so that people couldn't live under Potter's umbrella. And everybody is able to be successful and fruitful and get what they want. An entire town of people gets to have what they want because George has sacrificed everything that he wanted to do. And that is the humanity of George Bailey. He doesn't complain about, I think it's a very real thing. He doesn't complain that he is a good man. Is George Bailey a good man, everybody? Let's put that out there.
Yeah.
Is he a good man?
100%.
He's 100% a good man. However, he has these feelings inside of him like he wants to be selfish. And who doesn't? Who doesn't?
But I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm psyched you said that. Because I was before I even watched it today, I was just thinking about it leading up like to this for a couple of weeks. You know, I was like, you know, I think he wants to be, but he's too good of a person to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like every time, like for instance, when they're like, well, when they offer him the job as the secretary, the executive secretary of the building and loan, he's like, no, you know, Uncle Billy, he's your man. You know, like,
yeah.
And they're like, no, like, and like they'll vote with Potter. Otherwise, bong, and the music stops. And it's like, you know, it's like, of course I'm going to stay now. Like, everything. And I mean, the honeymoon, he's about to go on his honeymoon. And he goes inside the thing just to go like, see what he could do to get everybody together. No, don't go to Potter. You know, cause they're like, he's going to pay 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the hell? Oh man.
Even then, like he's the town has his back, even when he doesn't get to have a honeymoon, but they stage a honeymoon at his ramshackle house. That's, by the way, I mean, who moves into that house? Melanie, you have this thing about houses. Who moves into that house?
I would be fixing it up like crazy.
Holy moly.
On the honeymoon.
But I do like the house. And if it was salvageable, I would totally have bought it 100%.
Okay. Because it's a nice house.
It's a really nice
even
house.
Even though it's got the loose newel post at the top, which is indicative of his life, right? Like, it looks perfect, but really things are falling apart. Think about that for a minute. George thinks, up until he decides, through no fault of his own, everything's going to come crashing down on him. Uncle Billy screws up, and then he screams at Uncle Billy. And by the way, does he, again, he's so human. Does he love Uncle Billy?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. But deep down, does he think Uncle Billy's kind of a dope?
Of course.
Of course he does, because Uncle Billy is kind of a dope. He's got, what's his pet? He's got a bird or some shit.
Raven.
Yeah,
he's got
raven.
A lot of things.
Not a normal thing, folks. I'm sorry. Most people don't have a raven as a pet. But the fact of the matter is, like, deep down, he thinks Uncle Billy's a dope. Otherwise, he would have had Uncle Billy run the building and loan. So he, not that he can't be trusted, but he would probably ruin it. So deep in the back of his head, Jimmy Stewart is like, Uncle Billy's going to mess it up. And for so long, when finally Uncle Billy messes it up, that piece of his humanity comes out and he screams at this nice old man and calls him an old fool, because you know what? He's been thinking that since day one, and every day he wakes up and he's like, no, Uncle Billy's a good man. He's probably going to, you know, he's got his problems, but luckily he's not in charge. I'm going to trust him to do this. And all of that comes out. And who hasn't done that? Who hasn't done that? Everybody's done that. So we can identify with George Bailey on so many friggin' levels. It's crazy. It's crazy.
He kind of reminds me of Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Oh, sure.
Because he is just like, he always wanted to leave. He never planned on staying. Like, he couldn't wait to just get out of that town. One thing happened after another that he just couldn't leave. But I think he always planned on maybe he could leave one day or something. And then just everything just starts to unravel. Mm-hmm. And it's just a little bit more and more. And then when he realizes that he's going to literally not have any money for his family, for the town, for anybody, like, he just can't handle it anymore.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, like,
but he also,
he's unraveling.
But correct me if I'm wrong, and anyone can jump in. He thinks that it is all because of him. Because he helped the whole town. If he feels as though he messes up once, then everyone is going to, like, he's going to ruin everyone's lives.
That's why he felt like he was better off dead. Like, not dead, but never born, because he thought everybody was better off without him if he was never born.
But is that rational? Maurice, is that a rational thought? Is the town actually doomed because of this one thing? What do you think?
I mean, he just had, based on what we've seen, he just had a lot of heavy traumatic experiences that with the old man and the poison and the you know the little brother scene in the beginning. So many traumatic. These are huge moments that are happening. So it's like he's carrying that weight. Like if I'm not there to save, if I'm not there to do these things, they will fall apart because of the experiences that he's had up until that point. Even to the you know the bank situation when everybody came in and the whole Potter you know the whole Potter situation. So it's he carries that because he's just happened to have those scenarios in front of him. But I think that he has a little bit of FOMO, which is kind of an underlining theme throughout. The movie. Like, I just think that it's that idea that it's greener on the other side. I'm missing out on something. And, you know, of course, we get to the end. We'll talk a little more about it. But it's that idea that we all find ourselves in. I just recently moved to Florida like a year and a half ago. And so I have those moments internally of like, man, should I have done this? Was this the right move? I love it here, but I miss my family so much. I miss my people so much, but I'm here and I love it here too. And so you really never know until you do that. But I love how they kind of tie it all together at the end. But yeah, his experience would lead him to believe that if I don't do this, it's going to fall apart.
And the fact that it's mixed together with, I could have done that, but I can't. But those are his choices. He made choices.
Yeah. When he's seeing everybody else like make the money that he could have made, or even when he was offered to make it and he didn't make it, and had the life that he really wanted, traveling, money, all that.
Or he could have been a war hero, right? His brother became the war hero. He saved his brother and then lost his hearing. So then he couldn't become a war hero. So he had the same, he couldn't serve. So it's almost like, well, my brother, I could have been him. I could have had a parade and had all like people welcoming me back home, but I've been here the whole time. And he keeps trying to leave and he can't. And it just doesn't, it's so human because that is a cognitive dissonance to think that you are the one, but we all think that. Like we all think that in one way or another, we put ourselves in that situation. And that's why we identify with him. Go ahead, Jay, sorry.
No, Melanie, I can see she's champing at the bit for one thing, and that's to talk about the poison.
You know exactly what it was, because I know you and your face.
We both started laughing.
The same exact thing, because we know, like, when he said poison, like, I wrote that down in my notes, I'm like, poison, like, it was just hilarious. Like, he's, like, at the pharmacy, and there's literally a freaking bottle. Why is there a bottle of poison? And it says labeled poison, and, like, and it's in capsules, no less. Mm-hmm. So it's not even, like, it's going to be, like, okay, well, we sell, you know, arsenic back in the olden days for like rat poison or something. It's in a freaking capsule. Why would you have poison in a capsule?
I think he was adding the ingredients to the capsules. So he was putting it together. You know, obviously today's pharmacy.
Yeah.
It all gets delivered prepackaged. Yeah. I think
I
he was
that,
actually
why
putting
would
the stuff.
Putting poison in capsules.
Oh no, I get it. I don't know why is there.
Why is that there?
I was asking the same question. Yes, and it's to set things up to make it like you know, to show that guy would have been the crazy drunk.
And I get that. And a long time ago, people sold arsenic for like rat poison and whatever, which they don't anymore. But you'd find it in a box of powder. You wouldn't be finding it where people are putting it in capsules. You're not going to go feed a rat a capsule.
Right.
A capsule's for human use. Mm-hmm. So why is there poison in a capsule? Who's going to get that?
That
was really cartoony.
A little bit, but.
Yeah, cartoonish. Like he's like Tom and Jerry or something.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like that.
But they set it up to show, like it's a very emotional moment, though.
Sure.
Yeah.
When that guy, I mean, first off, when you know what was wrong with him, you know, he lost his kid.
Yeah.
And he just found out.
After he's, you know, obviously he shouldn't be hitting a kid, but however, when he finally realizes what George did for him. You know, like it's so hard to not get emotional when he kneels down and hugs him, you know, because, you know, I mean, nobody should ever lose a child. So, I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine. Yeah. So, like, it's like I instantly go like, oh, my God, that's terrible. Oh, that poor guy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so it's like they take you through that journey.
After he slaps the hell out of a child. But again, he's going through. He's not making the right choices. But he's not an evil person. There's no reason for us to...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What?
When he had that same time right before that, when he was talking to little,
Mary.
Mary, thank you.
Mary.
He was talking about how, like, he's going to go somewhere off to a different country and he's going to have a whole bunch of wives.
Yes.
Did you get that?
Yeah, he says, say like, brainless. Don't you know where coconuts come from?
Yeah.
He says, calls her brainless. Yeah. This is funny.
He's not, not the most sensitive small child, but you know that's how you flirted back in the day, right? Didn't you like put gum in the girl that you like's hair or something like that?
I don't know. Hopefully
that's not a good idea, folks. Just dating advice. Right. Don't do that.
It's the '40s, people. No, it's the '40s.
It's the '40s. Yeah.
Right. No, but you know what? It's also I could see it being a very because I always found it to be sort of confusing. When he gets like, I tell you what, Mary, and then he starts getting really angry. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I don't want it. And he's like, dad. And he says, it's like, oh, and they just start making out because
yeah. You talking about the phone call with Sam they called?
Yeah.
I don't want any plastics.
Now, I think because he's been dying to get out of here for so long, he looks at her as an anchor. He doesn't want her. He does want her, but he doesn't like want to admit that he wants her.
Right.
Because she's, you know, like she's going to mean he's sticking around. Like, mm-hmm. and he's right. like, every time I get so close, I got another thing weighing me into this freaking town. My brother, he just came back and he's being offered a wonderful job from his, you know, his new wife and father-in-law.
Yeah.
Great. I can't say no to him now. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, and if I go see Mary and I start to get, you know, like, I don't want you. Mm-hmm. But he really does. He just can't. That's why he's so pissed when he walks in the door. He's like, oh, so I'm a joke, huh?
And that whole scene, and I'll tell you what, that whole scene is so, it's so hard to watch. And because he's acting in a way you don't want to see him to act because you know he's a good man. And mm-hmm. that entire, and the way that she's responding to his aggression. It's so complicated, like it's so emotionally complicated that you can't not watch it. It's not uncomfortable to watch, but it should be uncomfortable to watch. You're just watching it going, these two people are very complicated. They have a lot of things going on in their brain, and this is them trying to hash it out. And it is just mind-bogglingly acted so well. How, like, it's so human the way that they're responding to each other. I mean, she says to her mother, is George Bailey down there? Yes, Mom. He's passionately making love to me or whatever. Like
making yes. violent.
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 Love to me,
holy moly. For the 40s. But that's a complicated thing to say in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's, boy.
She was really, I mean, I know society was a lot different then in many ways, but she was really patient with him.
Mm-hmm.
She just was able to really understand even a moment like that, like having that George will give me the moon, and mm-hmm. she was just really patient with him when while we say he's a good man, he had certain ways about him that I mean in today's era that probably would be a turnoff.
It, sure.
like, it'd be like, okay, I like him, I'm attracted to him, but he got these moments that really turned me off about him. Mm-hmm. But I mean in that time how patient she was and was able to see him at the core of who he really is,
mm-hmm.
and even in that moment I was just thought it was really good. Like mm-hmm. she really impressed me, her acting choices, and then just the actual character herself. Just I don't know. I just really, I don't know. This movie has these things that for some reason it resonates in the year that we live in. Like for some reason, and I wouldn't think that it would resonate as much as it does.
Mm-hmm. No, because these people are not cookie cutter characters. They are well-established, well-thought-out people that have informed emotions that are bringing forth why they act in particular situations that seem very legitimate. They seem very real, not scripted almost. Like, they seem real. Like, these are real people. And, boy, you see... Ugh, when you see... This is why I can't watch it every year. When you see Jimmy... When you see George's eyes at the end, and when he realizes that everyone has been wiped from the face of the earth, and the panic and the anger and the sadness that are all in his eyes, he doesn't, and I mean obviously he's shaking and whatnot, but he can read all of that in his eyes.
Sorry.
The fact of the matter is, like, he's saying so much with nothing, and we can identify his pain, like, in such a Think about it. You will never, because a supernatural thing, as Steve said, you will never have the situation where you can do what George Bailey has been allowed to do. Mm-hmm. So how do you represent that on screen authentically? Right? But I believe what he believes in that moment. And it's cuckoo. Oh, yeah. He's so good.
He's such a good actor.
Yep.
But I think one of the things that hits you too is like, even if you're like, oh my gosh, I wish I was never born. Everybody would be better off without me. No, he's not thinking at that time like, okay, well, if you were never born, not only was his brother would have died, but all those people would have died, but his kids would never have been born. He never would have met her. His kids never would have been born. He probably thinks that, you know, everyone's better off without him until he realizes that Zuzu's petals are not in his pocket anymore, mm-hmm. and that his kids are no more and they never will be because he was never born. I think then it really kind of hit him as well at that point. Like, oh my God, what did I do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And it goes to the fact that this can either excite you, this can make you feel good, or could you fill you with existential dread, depending on how you feel in the moment. But you have to remember the lives that you touch, even when you don't think you did. Like, just from a butterfly effect situation, the way that you cascade down the influences you've had with strangers, with people that you know, good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. On purpose or by accident. You know what I mean? We all make the right and wrong choices on purpose and by accident. Or maybe you thought it was a good idea at the time, but you don't know. And so maybe you think you're doing bad, but really in the long run, you're doing good. Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? That I like to think about that the student that I, you know, that I stressed out in my class one time and was like cried at the end of a test. And then I saw them, they came to visit me after they went to college for a year and they came back to visit and they said, man, am I glad I cried at the end of that test? Because I realized it wasn't really that bad once I saw a worse one. I'm like, see? Like, you can't, you don't know. Like, you feel bad about making somebody cry, not on purpose, but then you don't know what dividends, though. I never do that on purpose, but it's like, you don't know what dividends that's going to pay down the road. You don't know. So it doesn't mean you don't live. You just don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you can't put a dollar amount on, you know, value.
Right.
Know, mm-hmm. The impact.
Yep.
And that is what has been shown. I mean, we've all been there before. We've all had, I'd imagine at some point, dreams and ambitions. We'll look at certain celebrities or artists, whoever we look up to. We say, man, I would like to be somewhere in that position in my field, in my regard. And we look at that as it's so great and it's so awesome. And then we'll see a tweet or we'll see a post, we'll see a video, documentary or something. And you realize the sadness that is there. And when I recognize and see the sadness that is there, it makes me reassess where I am and realize, no, this is actually the value. To be able to see my child, to be able to be my wife, to be able to be amongst, I can go to a grocery store. You know, I can go down the street. I'm not being mauled. You know, it's just that type of thing that we overlook as humans all the time because we just always think it's greener on the other side. And we want to put monetary value on those things. But if we would sit back and really assess, we realize like, oh, actually things are pretty good when I really look at it on paper. You know, and I think George was going through that often when he was thinking about Mary, thinking about his brother, you know, all of these things. And that would bring that reminder like, oh, I'm not doing anything until obviously the end where it all resonates. So it's like, no, your impact means more than what you thought you the experience of leaving would have been for you. And I just loved like how happy he was to see his car crashed. Like that was like, because I felt the same way when I seen it. I was like, yes, yes, blood is in my mouth. The car is crashed.
Burp, my mouth is bleeding. You know, he was so upset about it when it happened and because he thought that was like the worst thing ever. Then he saw what could have been the worst thing ever and he was so happy. Mm-hmm. Like now that's not a big deal anymore because he's seen worse.
I like it when he says, Merry Christmas to Mr. Potter. And then when he gets back to his home and he says, hey, ho, hello, Merry Christmas, Mr. Bank Examiner. Hey, we're all going to jail. Isn't that great? And he goes and tries to find his kids. Like, I don't know. Like, he's kind of right. Like, I don't know. I guess so, you know. I mean.
So earlier when you were talking about how, like, the whole Uncle Billy thing, when even though he screams at Uncle Billy and says, hey, you know, what the hell, he is basically also taking the fall because he says to Mr. Potter, I misplaced $8,000. He goes, oh, you misplaced it.
And
he
right.
goes, yeah. Like, so he's not saying mm-hmm. Uncle Billy misplaced $8,000. He still feels responsible. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the one.
I noticed that.
Now, this could easily get missed, and I've missed it for many years. I saw somebody write about it once, and I was like, oh, no. Wow, that's interesting. So today I put it on subtitles. And when he's talking to Uncle Billy, he's like, did you check your house? And he's like, I checked every room in my house, including the room that I couldn't go back into when I lost my wife. And I'm paraphrasing. So that could explain a lot of Billy's behavior.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like that he is so distraught that he has never dealt with it properly. Like, okay. You know, that so he's kind of a...
Yeah.
You know, a head case. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, or could be... he probably already was in that direction, and mm-hmm. that made it worse. But kind of like, you know, one of those things you don't always hear because he kind of is... He's saying it so upset, and then that's when he grabs him and shakes him. Mm-hmm. It's like, listen, you fool.
Yeah. If anyone's going down the list, it's you. It's not me. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Do you guys realize when he was in, like, you know, the bad area when everybody was chasing him, or, like, when he was trying to find everybody and he was talking to people, like, the bartender was so cruel, for one thing, to, like, to that poor old man, to, like, they know he's homeless and he's going to go outside and sleep in the snow and almost freeze to death, but they spray him with water and get him soaking wet so he can really freeze to death mm-hmm. and then throw him outside and they throw them outside. And like, then later on the cops are shooting at him, like with a bunch of people around in the middle of the town with no care for human concern. But the thing is, he deserves to be shot at because he's saying, Mary, Mary, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and he's like trying to like talk to people. But, like, why would you shoot at him? He's just trying to, hey, wait up. Let me talk to you. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my gosh, he's crazy. Let's go shoot at him now. He deserves to be killed. You know?
Well, he did punch the cop, though. He punched the cop and started running after. So,
was that before or after, though? I don't remember.
When he was chasing Mary or?
No, like, yeah. Like, when did they start shooting at him?
He did punch the cop before he started shooting. Yeah.
They did? Okay.
I think right there, right at that moment.
Okay, and then, well, still, you don't shoot to kill because of that. Yeah, he doesn't have a weapon on him. But, and then he's shooting out, and there's people, like, ducking and stuff.
Right, like, walking by.
Did you notice that the Bart and Ernie are the cop and taxi driver, yep. Bart and Ernie?
Yeah,
yep.
And that also they said that, like, people are building these houses for, like, $5,000, and that was supposed to be, like, super expensive.
Well, it is. Back in the day, yeah, it was very expensive.
I was like, man, I would love to go back in time and steal up some houses for $5,000.
Right, no. I personally like the bartender. We've served drinks to drunk, and that's what we do. We drink some more. Like when
now think about it.
Yeah,
I've made this connection before. If you've seen Ferris Bueller, Cameron does a very good impression of that same style when he's doing George Peterson.
Oh yeah,
like when he's doing that, he's like, you know, he's like, this is George Peterson. And he's like, and then like, you know, that same bartender is like, you know, like, we serve hard liquor for drunks, you know, whatever. So it's just kind of funny. It's like very, I wonder if he like, you know, picked it up from that guy or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about Lionel Barrymore.
Oh, you mean the devil? Playing... devil incarnate? Yes.
Dude.
Wait,
there's a moment.
That?
That's Mr. Potter.
Okay.
No, but he played it brilliantly.
Sure.
I mean, the voice, they cast him perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
The voice was amazing, you know, to play that old, you know, crotchety bastard that, like, everybody hates in town, rich guy. But how great is the moment when he's offering George the $20,000 a year? And mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of hard not to be tempted.
Yes, a lot of
money. Saying all these things, right?
A lot of money.
You know, when you make $40 a week, you know, and then it boils down to $10 a week, and he's going to offer you $20,000 per year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, like, he says that, and then the chair is like 10 times lower.
Yep.
That you're, you know, like, it's a lot lower than the. And then when I just love that the moment he shakes his hand, that's when it dawns on him. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm doing a deal with the devil here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that posture.
He's a Simpsons character after Potter.
Sure.
Who?
They did.
I don't remember who it was.
Mr. Potter.
Is it Mr. Potter?
Mr. Potter.
His name is Mr. Potter?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
What, in The Simpsons?
No, Burns. Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns.
Oh, Burns. Mr. Yeah. Burns. You're right.
Sorry, sorry, sorry. Mr. Burns.
Yeah, gotcha. Mr. Burns. Yeah.
Isn't there a
part?
That
no
would have been $384 a week for him.
Wow.
If he had took the deal.
Wow.
$84.
Yeah. Who damn? God damn.
I think they said wasn't like $375,000 a year. Is that right? If it was today's
probably.
Money?
Ooh.
Would that be that? Would that be right?
That'd be all right. Yeah, my mom. That'd be suitable.
It's hard to pass.
That'd be suitable. Yeah, I would say. Yeah, Potter is not only is he the devil, but they also make him kind of androgynous. Like, he is Scrooge. He doesn't like women. He doesn't like men. He doesn't like anybody. He is not interested in any of that stuff. He's only worried about the money, which is all Scrooge all day long. Right?
What's so funny? It's the type that doesn't spend it.
Yeah.
Just accrues it. Mm-hmm. No offspring.
Yep.
Not going to do anything with it. Mm-hmm. Just have it.
Yep.
Like, the most messed up thing.
And he seems to not age as well. So he is kind of he's an ageless demon. If you want to think of it that way, but on the other
with eyebrows that freaking go into a damn triangle,
yeah. Unbelievable.
His eyebrows go like that.
He had so much money, and everybody else was so poor, and he took $8,000, which is so much money back then, and he had so much money, and everybody had nothing. I just thought he was evil. So
well,
evil.
He's taking the money because he knows it's the end of the building and loan.
I know, but he's such an asshole.
Well, no shit. We're not supposed to like him. I want to find some redeeming value in Mr. Potter. He's not. He's the devil. He is the devil incarnate. That's his whole thing. He doesn't even walk. He floats. He doesn't walk. He floats. I mean, he rolls, but it's the same as floating. He's just, he wheels in and wheels out. His feet don't touch the ground. Perfect. Absolutely.
Another thing. He has a painting of himself on the wall.
Wow.
That's right. Look. If I ever have a mansion, you bet there's going to be a painting of me on the wall.
Come on. Just saying. Like, that's the only one he likes. There's only one person in this world that he likes, and that's it.
That is a special person. Yeah. A special person. All right.
Sentimental hog boy.
In his own mind.
Do you want to talk about the chair like a throne chair, though? Wasn't it like some kind of throne chair, his wheelchair?
Sure.
Yeah, kind of.
It's throny.
It was a fancy wheelchair back then. Mm-hmm. It was a fancy wheelchair.
Okay. And a silent man that pushes him.
Back then.
Yes.
That pushes him around.
Yeah. A dude that doesn't talk. Just right out of Hellraiser. Absolutely right out of Hellraiser.
People were dressed like him. Like they said, I didn't write it down, but it said like, the person who was pushing him around was pretty much always dressed like him. And like, I think his chauffeur, but all the people that were like on his side were like dressed just like him.
That's okay. It's interesting. Too bad I won't watch it again until next year. I'll have to remember that.
Yeah.
Jay, what are we going to say?
No, I was saying, do you want to talk about the ending before we go to TMI?
Sure. The ending is the best thing ever. It's a complete redemption of all of his thoughts. It is... We go from the absolute, I mean, think about it. The man's about to jump off a bridge because he's had it, right? That to me is that's his logical end, which doesn't make any sense. Goes against every bit of human condition. You're built to want to survive, but he doesn't want to survive anymore. So he wants to jump off a bridge. And then he wants to, but the moment he sees someone else do it, he must save that person instead. Like, what is it? Right. Even at the end, you're thinking about other people before you. So that's the first part. Second of all, he gets his wish and he goes through. He sees what Potterville, that Bedford Falls have become Pottersville. And there's a bunch of whorehouses and bars and strip clubs. And it basically goes to hell in a bucket. And
it's like Biff's world in Back to the Future, too.
Yeah, no doubt. but then when he gets it back, the payoff is just... The utter dread and sadness in his eyes is culpable, and you can taste the panic and fear that's coming through his eyes. And when finally he realizes, we go from that to absolute and abject joy of, I got it all back and now I'm not. It's you're right, it's Christmas Carol. It's, I'm not going to, I realize all of this now. And it goes back to, and it tears me up, and I said this, The line, and I said this on when I got married to my current wife, my second marriage, and at the I had a thing at my house, and all my friends were there, and or at least not friends, but the people who are at the wedding party, I should say. And I said no man is a failure who has friends. And that's, you know what I mean? You can fail in your life, but you're never a failure so long as you have friends. And that's because you are allowing yourself to be vulnerable to other people. And that's the thesis of the movie, right? No man is a failure who has friends. And Potter is a failure because he has no friends. Doesn't matter.
So I just want to say, like, before, obviously when the girl starts playing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and then it goes into Auld Lang Syne, mm-hmm. those are the two moments, like, you know, like, the are just, like, so emotional for me to, like, to watch. I'm like, oh, especially because that's when everybody's coming in with all the money.
Yep.
But it's like, before that, I think a great way to sum it up on how he's so thrilled to be back is that he grabs the newel post, mm-hmm. and as he's going up the stairs, stops and accidentally pulls it with him.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, he was really pissed about it.
Yep.
He grabs it and kisses it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before he puts it back down.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's so great. Because it's like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. None of this bothers me at all.
Yep.
Like, you know, I love you guys. And, you know, because he sees the bigger picture, mm-hmm. and the value.
Yep. Fix the newel post.
He needed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is vacation.
He needed that, though. He needed to see what he saw to actually appreciate his life. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people sometimes are not enjoying their life as it's happening, and they're always waiting for something better to come along. Oh, when we, you know, well, as soon as we have money, we can go on vacation, or as soon as we do this, we can do that. Or, you know, it's almost like sometimes you're waiting for something better to come along, but you're not enjoying life as it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years from now, you're going to look back and go, oh my God, I would give anything to just be back in that situation again, when the kids were still in the house, if they've already moved out, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. just things that you're not living in the present time, enjoying every little minute of it, because it just goes by so fast. And I think he needed to see what he had was amazing that he didn't appreciate until now.
Yeah, it's very zen.
A lot of times, especially in an era we live in now, we just always think that we're missing out on something, or we think that there's something better all the time. And sometimes you already have the awesome. You already have the greatness, right? It's right there a lot of times. And as flawed as it may be, it's yours. This is your journey, your story, mm-hmm. your tribe, you know. And so with him coming back and realizing with that, you know, the stair post and just everything that was put back into place, it's like just accepting things as they are, because things are just not that bad as we believe, as things around us lead us to believe a lot of times.
It's time for TMI with Melanie.
Listen to this. I am in the bathroom right before the movie starts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in the stall, and there's no toilet paper.
Yeah.
And mine are at home TMI. In a display case above
TMI,
my bed.
Yeah.
TMI.
TMI, my friends.
TMI?
Too much information.
I used to say don't go there, but that's lame.
Now, here's Melanie with your timeless movie info.
Melanie, show us how wonderful it is.
Well, this is kind of sad because they had a very expensive budget of $3.7 million back then, and it only grossed $3.3 million.
Wow.
I hope these people made a ton of money after all this, because it was shown so many times on TV. Now that happens. Hopefully they made something off of that.
Yep.
The gym floor that opens in the middle to reveal the swimming pool underneath was filmed at Beverly Hills High School in Beverly Hills, California, and was real and is still in regular use. It was built in 1939 to 1940. The design was quite progressive and still is considered to be an architectural icon and local landmark. I thought that was really cool. It has also been in some other movies too. The film is set to take place from 1919 to December 24th, 1945. James Stewart plays George Bailey from the age of 21 to 38, from the night of the school dance in 1928 to Christmas of 1945. Stewart was 37 to 38 years old during the filming, from April to July of 1946. And Donna Reed was 25, and she plays Mary from the age of 18 to 35. The set for Bedford Falls was constructed in 2 months and was one of the longest sets that had ever been made for an American movie. It covered 4 acres, RKO's Encino Ranch. It included 75 stores and buildings, a main street, a factory district with a large residential and slum area. Main Street was 300 yards long, three whole city blocks. The set was made use of 20 transplanted oak trees, and for the winter scenes, 3,000 tons of shaved ice, 300 tons of gypsum, 300 tons of plaster, and 6,000 gallons of chemicals. I have more about the snow later. It made use of sets originally designed from another movie made in 1931, and it had a real working bank, tree-lined Central Park, where pigeons and cats and dogs were allowed to roam the mammoth set to give a real life lived-in feel. Because the story covers different seasons, an alternate town set was adaptable. Frank Capra had once driven through Scenic Falls, New York, and this proved his inspiration for this fictional Bedford Falls. Every December, the town holds a Bedford Falls celebration in honor of the film. For the scene that required Donna Reed to throw a rock through the window of the Granville House, director Frank Capra hired a marksman to shoot out the window on cue. To everybody's amazement, Donna broke the window herself because she had played baseball in high school and had a really good throwing arm. Uncle Billy drunkenly leaves the Bailey home, and it sounds like he's stumbling into some trash cans on the sidewalk. In fact, a crew member dropped a large tray of props right after Thomas Mitchell went off screen. James Stewart began laughing, and Mitchell quickly improvised, "I'm all right, I'm okay." Director Frank Capra decided to use this take in the final cut and gave the stagehand a $10 bonus for improving the sound. During the filming of It's a Wonderful Life, James Stewart was actively suffering from PTSD and depression due to his service in World War II. Stewart told friends that he related a lot of his character to George Bailey. Some of the scenes where George acted out in anger was considered basically how he kind of felt when he was struggling with his own mental health. While filming the scene in which George plays in the bar, James Stewart was so overcome with grief, he began to sob. Frank Capra later framed and blew that shot up because he wanted to catch that expression on Stewart's face. This is why the shot looks so grainy and compared to the rest of the film, because it was actually his real tears.
Wow.
Despite being set around Christmas, the film was actually filmed during a heat wave, and it got so hot that director Frank Capra gave everybody a day off to recuperate. Films made prior to this one used cornflakes painted white for the falling snow effect. But the cornflakes were so loud, the dialogue had to be dubbed in later. Director Frank Capra wanted to record a live sound, so a new snow effect was developed using fomite, a firefighting chemical, soap, and water. The mixture was then pumped at high pressure through a wind machine to create the silent falling snow. 6,000 gallons of new snow was used in this film. The RKO Effects Department received a Class 2 scientific or technical award from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences for the development of this new snow. When Corby's character was asked how much money she needed at the bank when he was trying to give money away to everybody, she replied $17, which was actually in the script. But just prior to the actual take, Capra took Corby aside and told her to give Stewart some odd number, thinking that it would be funnier. When she said $17.50 to Stewart, he was taken off guard and impulsively just kissed her, which was not in the script. Stewart's spontaneous reply was so genuine that Capra left it in the scene in the final film. According to Robert J. Anderson, H.B. Warner was really drunk during the scene in which Mr. Gower slaps young George. It was so real that it caused blood to actually come from Anderson's ear. After the scene was finished, Warner hugged and comforted Anderson. Henry Travers, who played Clarence, also stars in The Bells of St. Mary of 1945 as Horace P. Bogardus. When George Bailey passes a movie theater towards the end of the movie, the film is being showcased. Uncle Billy's Raven, Jimmy the Raven, appeared in over 1,000 feature films, including every Capra film from You Can't Take It With You in 1938, Jimmy the Crow that landed on the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz as well in 1939. So that Raven we were talking about was literally in 1,000 movies. It says 1,000 feature films. Mr. Potter is one of the few movie villains whose fate is left unknown by the end of the film after stealing $8,000 and his attempt to frame George Bailey for embezzling the $8,000. This was very unusual for Hollywood film at that time. The motion picture production code, popularly known as Hays Code, it required that criminals in movies must always be shown to either be punished or made to repent at the end of every film. In the scene at the dance of the high school gym, when George Bailey first sees Mary and approaches her, a young man is talking to Mary, Carl Alfalfa Switzer. Alfalfa of the Little Rascals fame was uncredited role of Freddie Othello. He is also in the scene where he turns the key that opens the gym floor to reveal the swimming pool. Actor and producer Sheldon Leonard said in an interview that he only agreed to play Nick the bartender so that he could have extra money to buy baseball tickets. FBI agents who had viewed this film determined it to be a communist propaganda, as the story depicts a capitalist banker, Potter, as a villain. So they didn't like it. Let's see. The film is one of the five times that I'm not going to say her name right. Beulah Bondi.
I'm going to say that.
Okay, so that's the mom of George in this movie. This is the fifth time she has played his mother in movies.
Oh.
She's also played in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington in 1938, Human Hearts in 1938, Vicious Lady in 1938, and The Identity Crisis of 1971.
James, wow, everything was 38.
Mm. Right.
There's three of them in the same year.
This is so weird, though. Like, oh, we need someone to play his mom. Go get her. James Stewart said George was his favorite character that he ever played. Donna Reed's favorite, film of her own, and it was her first starring role. Director Frank Capra often said that this was his favorite of all-time films. Steven Spielberg also cites this film as one of his favorite movies. That's it.
Super.
Nice. Sorry about that. I know it's long.
No, it's fine. Super. And also, due to a legal error, the film went out of copyright in 1974, which enabled it to be shown on TV in repeats with no fees. But the oversight has been corrected by the studio, something George might have something to say about. That's from
now. Is that
that's cool.
Is that when the movie finally hit? Everybody loves it because of that. Is that when it?
Yeah, they just kept playing it over and over again, like Night of the Living Dead. Like you could play it without any copyright, so nobody had to pay anything. It was pretty much open access.
And that's where it got its wheels.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I know it was
a
flop, but then it only like picked up later on in life. Like,
correct.
As a thing. So.
Yeah.
It's time now for Final Judgment. Are you ready to rubber stamp this bitch? Here's the Final Judgment.
Would that count as a bell?
Yeah, that's a bell. That's a bell.
All right, so that some angels just got their wings like about three or four times during Final Judgment.
Yeah, all right, good for us. You're welcome.
Yeah. you can go, Chris.
Sure. It holds up. It holds up as much as Hamlet holds up. I mean, it's straight up a masterpiece. It doesn't matter about, you know what? And it doesn't matter about the fact that it's an old timey film where the lead female character is going to be a homemaker and she's going to be a mom to as many children as possible. And dad's going to go to work and come home after. Like, I know that. That's not the way of things or the way that movies are trying to go now. But the fact of the matter was 1946. What do you expect? It's not going to be any different. That's what they did. It's not bad or good. That's just how it was. You don't have to. Again, I saw White Christmas today. It's horribly dated for that, but it's still a good movie. That's just how it was. It doesn't make it bad or good. It's just how it was. There's a lot of other things that's just how Hollywood was. You don't have to. You can't change it. So the fact of the matter is that because George Bailey is so identifiable with us in one way or another through all the generations, because of his humanity, you can identify with something about George Bailey. It doesn't matter if you can follow Jimmy Stewart and his character arc, then it should hold up for you. So yeah, of course it holds up. So I'm going to go to the still life Maurice Hunt.
Oh man!
Talk to me.
It's so crazy because I see you three, but y'all can't see me. That is crazy.
That's all right. That's all right. You're handsome. You're still handsome.
Thanks.
It's all good.
Thanks. The frozen screen is still working for me.
No problem.
Right. No. It holds up. It was a slow burn for me initially, but that second half really starts to gain steam. And like you said, the George Bailey character. There's a lot of themes that. It doesn't matter the time and generation. It resonates because it's the human behavior. And that's one thing that has always been a through line through the beginning of mankind is the behavior that we have. It holds up. That
mm-hmm.
We'll just leave it there. It holds up. Yes.
All right. I'm sorry, man. I'll go. Yes, it absolutely does. I think because it's just one of those things that if you, like you had said, people aren't in this movie. There are aspects I'm going, I've never in my life seen a guy pretend to be a donkey throughout the entire, throughout my life, going, hee-haw, right? No, it's not relatable. Mm-hmm. That those things are not.
Yeah.
There's just the way that they talk in some ways. No, but it doesn't matter. It's the overall theme that if it still hits you somewhere, then I think it holds up, especially the way it does. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you feel anything for him at the end, like, it's like, you know what I mean? And then when that ending comes and they're all pouring their money out because he did so many, he sacrificed so much of himself for other people.
Yeah.
I mean, this we could use a lot more George Baileys in the world. How about that?
Sure.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I think it definitely holds up. I mean, how can it not? Because they're still playing it every year, and there's so many movies where literally people are watching it in the background. Everybody knows this movie. Even if they haven't seen it, they know what it's about, and they've, you know, heard certain lines from it. Do I think that it would, like, younger generations now, you'd have to probably sit there and force them to sit there and watch it if they didn't grow up with it? Yeah. Would they be a little bit, you know, bored with it? Yeah, they have no attention span. But if you force them to watch it and pay attention to it, it's really good. It's still such a really good movie. I really enjoyed it. I think I've always just had it on in the background. I think there's only been about three times where I've watched the whole thing from front to back. Once with my kids, once with my husband, because he had never seen it. And he was like, this is not a Christmas movie.
No, it's not.
It's like, because he's used to Hallmark Christmas movies, you know. But this time I enjoyed it even more than the other times that I watched it. Like, it definitely moves you and it grabs you. I think it, you know, how can it not hold up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at it. It's still going strong after all these years. But
there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, thanks to TikTok, nobody has an attention span.
Yeah,
this movie's out for everybody else.
Gracious.
All right, so that was our show, everybody. Yeah. Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
So that was our show, everyone. And I'd like to thank Maurice Hunt for being here again,
thank
man.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Tell us all the stuff you're into. Like, what are you doing?
Okay, I'm trying to say it super fast so everybody can hear.
We can hear you good now.
Oh,
and see you
okay.
Good.
So quickly, Roll, the audio drama series. There's three seasons. I'm trying to release an audiobook version of it soon, so be on the lookout for that. Also, we have a Sopranos review podcast called Good Earners, reviewing the Sopranos. So that is out. We are on season 4. And then also we have another podcast called Another Week in the Books, where we discuss issues amongst men from a black perspective. And it's very enlightening and it's very impactful and people are really enjoying it. There's a lot to get from it, even if you're not a man. So those are the things that I'm involved with. Also, well, and if you're a Twin Peaks and Sopranos fan, I also have an
Instagram. Sounds really good.
I have an Instagram page called Sopran Peaks. It's a blend between Twin Peaks and Sopranos. So for those people that are fans of both shows.
Wow.
I can go check that
That's
out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's it.
Tony Soprano holding a log, talking backwards.
Hey, it's a, you'd be surprised. Okay. Just go to the page. It's pretty fun. It's pretty good.
All right, I'll check that out.
I've never seen it, but I've heard so many weird things about it. Like people are like, "Oh, that's so odd." That I was like, "Yeah, I'll wait then." Like the Twin Peaks show.
Yeah. Oh.
And then they showed, they were like Twin Peaks on The Simpsons, and they showed him and like some girls like slow dancing with a horse.
Yep.
And right. He's like,
like this, but the my
all of that. Yeah.
Talking backwards.
That's so funny.
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. Well, that was our show. And hey, I'd like to thank Chris Martineau and Melanie Howerton for being here as well, and Steve Lavoie for doing our voices, and Draco and the Malfoys for our theme music. And until next time, movies may not age like fine wine, but we drink it anyway. Bye.